to you about a project which somehow was started here, was started after several discussions with Lucien. Moreover, I'm also pleased to tell you that our book I was working on here with Ingemar Bengtsson is finished, and I have, first of all, a pleasure to thank many of you. I had a chance to talk about different things related to quantum entanglement, and I was thinking somehow in the introduction to many of you, so now I would like to thank you again and show that it is ready. If you haven't seen it yet, don't know who it is. Here, speaking to this audience, I don't think I need to make a long introduction concerning the theory of Lucien. I will just refer to couple of his papers, and basically the papers related to five reasonable axioms concerning quantum theory. So I'll be very brief. This is, I'm sorry, Lucien, I couldn't do it as you are doing usually. So it's just a statement from Lucien's talks or Lucien's paper. He somehow proposed to treat quantum mechanics as a kind of generalization of standard probability theory. The idea is simple. We have a kind of preparation phase, transformation, measurement. We can get k different, we call them numbers of degrees of freedom. We have, with some probabilities k, things may happen. And then we define state as a mathematical object which helps us to compute probabilities. For instance, in the classical theory, this is just a probability vector Pi, so we'll say it has k components. In the quantum mechanics, this is a density matrix, rho ij. And now, in our setup, we define number n as the maximal number of states which can be distinguished. And in the classical theory, the number of degrees of freedom k is equal to n. So basically, we have a non-normalized or sub-normalized vectors, probability vectors of non-negative numbers, the sum of which is smaller or equal to unity. So k is equal to n. Why, in quantum theory, we need n squared parameters to describe Hermitian density matrix. Here, it's easier to work with sub-normalized states, so space of rock is smaller or equal to unity. And now, just I will briefly sketch five axioms of Lucien, which allowed him to derive quantum theory. So, just very briefly, probabilities, subspaces, composite systems, continuity, and simplicity. I don't think I'm the best person to explain all of this, so all you know, if you don't, please ask Lucien to explain it. Again, here, however, I will emphasize that from subspace and composite systems axiom, it follows that the number of degrees of freedom k is a simple algebraic power-like function of number of distinguishable states. And we know that r could be equal to 1, then we get the classical theory, just classical probability theory. And since there is a continuity axiom, which basically tells that between any two pure states, there are continuous transformations which take one state, one pure state into another, this continuity axiom rules out classical theory. In classical theory, this is a standard probability simplex for n equal 3. We have three pure states, three corners. They are not connected. There's no possible way to have a continuous reversible transformation going from one state to another. So because of this continuity axiom, the case R equal even, so linear theory is ruled out. And then out of all other theories, simplicity axiom implies that the second possibility R is equal to 2, and then setting K equal to N squared, we get the standard quantum theory winner. Here, I'll only emphasize that this continuity axiom is, in a sense, critical. Because there is this continuous transformation which joins, let's say, state 2 with state 1, here is a kind of a sketch of a block sphere for n equal 2. You recognize block sphere. We can just take and rotate unitarily this state to another state. This is just any rotated state. And it's a kind of coherent superposition between those two states and existence of such coherent superposition, which was not possible with classical theory, is responsible for all interference effects we know from quantum theory. So this is a kind of introduction. And now my main attempt is to think whether one could go somehow beyond quantum mechanics and, using this somehow general setup of Lucien, ask, is it possible to construct a theory for which number of degrees of freedom changes, like n cubed, or perhaps n4, or even pi? And in the title of my talk, I mentioned the quantum theory, so I will somehow concentrate on this. Now, let us forget for a while about complicated considerations about foundations of physics, and think what students, let's say second year students, know about quantum theory. They know that such objects like rho ij, which denote density matrix, appear. So a clever student could ask, well, why two indices are sufficient? Perhaps we should work on some objects which have three indices, like sigma abc, or perhaps four or more. So this is my question. Is it somehow necessary to take into account larger theory in which we would have to use more complicated objects? So there are many different approaches to such a problem, and of course you can try to generalize the standard quantum theory in different ways. For instance, one could try to consider more complicated tensor-like objects and tensor-like algebra instead of standard matrices, and to look for a new formalism such that it would, in a special case, reduced to the standard density matrices. However, with tensor, the randomization of tensor is not so simple. There is no such a simple equivalent of the procedure of diagonalization of a matrix. With tensor, it's not so simple. And just 2 years ago, as I was here, it occurred to me that maybe it's sufficient not to put away entire formalism of quantum theory, but use standard quantum mechanics for composite systems and try to create such a, let's say, quantum theory by an additional assumption. So to generalize the set of allowed states in such a way to preserve the number n of distinguishable states. And this would be a kind of an approach I'm going to present. So let me now show you a simple picture. For n equal 2, we know that a classical bit consists of 2 points. If you consider pure states, if you consider mixed states, it's an entire line. And we can embed it inside qubit. So here's our block sphere, sphere of pure states, and mixed states in the center. And of course, this line is somehow just here inside the block ball. Well, so here we increase the number of degrees of freedom. Here I just plot for simplicity normalized states. Of course, if they are unnormalized, there is a convex hull with 0. So here for normalized states, I went from dimensionality 1 to 3. So now the idea is simple. Why don't we try to put this three-dimensional ball, just a standard normal ball, into a more dimensional space? In principle, I would suggest to embed it in, well, 15 dimensions. So I cannot now plot it here. I don't know how to plot 15 dimensions. But you understand the idea. Here we put a line inside the ball, and now we take the ball and use 15 dimensional space. Why 15? Because it's 4 squared minus 1. And construct a reasonable black convex set of allowed states of the generalized theory. Well, now, okay, I don't know how to call it. So this was a bit, this qubit, and this would be like super bit or extended bit. Well, I don't know yet. Perhaps extended bit. And designing such a theory, we have to find a reasonable, let's say, shape, a reasonable structure, a complex set in 15 dimensions, which is reasonable. For instance, it can only support two distinguishable states, not more. We have here two distinguishable states in classical theory, two in quantum. We have also to keep those two distinguishable states as we create this extended bit. And here's my suggestion. Mn is just a standard set of quantum state. So there are now here, for a while, I just, for pedagogical purposes, I use normalized state. So L2 is, for instance, just block Bohr. Then M4, it will be, how it's called, a set of two qubits or cube quad. For a cube quad, well, we can diagonalize. This is just standard quantum mechanics. We can diagonalize density matrix of size 4, and the spectrum of it will belong to this red tetrahedron. So this is just a tetrahedron of all possible spectra of a cube quad. And here's a proposition, a suggestion. I will now truncate this red tetrahedron, and I will chop away four corners to obtain an octagon which is inscribed inside the tetrahedron. In other ways, in other words, I take all permutations of the coordinates 0, 0, 1 half, 1 half. So I have different eight different permutations, six different, and I take convex hull of those. And my set of extended states, it's another possible definition, is just a convex hull of a given pure state of the standard quantum theory. Turns out with the maximally mixed state and then rotated by a unitary matrix, in this case of size 4. And this definition just coincides. By the way, this is written in red, but this gives me this black body, which, as you see, is a subset of the set of mixed states for a cube quad.
What was U? U was chosen from?
U is any unitary matrix, in this case of size 4, in general of size n squared. And now, what it means? It means that, okay, just a kind of remark concerning a comparison between classical and quantum theory. In the classical case, we have probability vectors, and we can extend it, lift it to quantum theory by considering diagonal matrices, density matrices, which are definition. And if we want to go back, we just, okay, it's kind of decoherence process, we take a diagonal of any matrix law. In this way, we have a transition from classical to quantum. So now here, when we have a transition from quantum to this extended theory, in a sense that we allow a given state to be lifted to the state of, let's say, four indices, it's just a composed state. And we assume that there is a kind of gross ancilla, an ancillary object of the same size. The only point is that now I say that for any sigma I can define, sorry, for any rho I define sigma just by tensoring it with identity. Moreover, for any sigma which needs not to be of this product form, I can perform partial states. However, for the set of allowed states, admissible states of the general quartic theory, I take only a subset defined in this way of the set of mixed states of two qubits. So this is it. Now, several questions arise concerning such a definition. First is how to prove that there are only n distinguishable states. Here's a small short lemma by Daniel Markham. By the way, the k numbers, okay, I mean, it needs not to be the equal of the k I used before. But the lemma is very simple. If we have a set of k mutually distinguishable states, they might be pure, might be mixed, and they live in d-dimensional Hilbert space, then it's possible to show that the sum of ranks of all those states cannot be larger than D. In our case, the pure states of our general theory are mixed, and they consist, because they are extended by a tensor product with identity, so they contain at least n non-zero values equal to 1 over n. And here are spectra, they're diagonal matrices, and they just represent a set of n states. which correspond to pure states in the extended theory and are mutually distinguishable. Basically, the idea is simply live in different subspaces. So for n equal 2, well, you just take four numbers, 1/2, 1/2, 0, 0, instead of 1n. You perform arbitrary permutations, so there are six possibilities of putting those. This is how much? 4 choose 2 permutations. And you can take a convex hull of it. By the way, in mathematics, there are such, this theory of polygons, it's called a permutation, because we basically allow all possible permutations. So now we see that in our definition, the set of extended states is defined by assuming that spectra belong to such a permutation. In our case, for n equal to, it's just x bit, so this permutohedron stage name reduces to the octahedron, which is inside tetrahedron of spectra of a q quant. Let me know. Yes?
In your quartic theory, what does an observation correspond to?
Okay, I'll come to the point in a second. Now, okay, I start in a kind of geometric approach. First, I describe the scene, the states, and later I will talk very shortly about observables and dynamics. But let me now just finish describing the scenes of the set of states. I would like to make such a remark, which is somehow, okay, was based on all discussions I have also here with from Brazil, Ernesto Galvão. Okay. So, well, you know, very simply that if you measure three different components of angular momentum operator for a qubit, in principle, there are three numbers like x, y, and z, but they are not arbitrary because they have to live in the ball, so it's just a standard block ball which is inscribed inside of a cube. The cube is formed by, let's say, three qubits. So in a sense, you can say, oh, the set of mixed states in the quantum theory is obtained by truncating corners of a cube which represents three bits. So here, N2 is just a block ball which sits inside a cube of three classical bits. By the way, this truncation is non-trivial. Just because we truncate those corners, the body we get is much, enjoys that nicer symmetry, of course, it's now round, we can rotate it as we wish, what we could not do in the classical case. So this is the kind of comparison of the classical quantum theory. And here what we do is a similar, but this was in the standard space of states, and here is the space of diagonal matrices. We take a 2 qubits, so a quad, we take this tetrahedron of eigenvalues and truncate corners. And by this truncation, we gain some symmetry. For instance, this octahedron can be now reversed upside down, so reflected, what was not possible for the larger blue tetrahedron. So I'm coming already to your question. So of course you can ask what about measurements. How can we define measurements in the extended theory? So first, let me briefly remind you the standard approach for quantum theory. We define POVLs, positive operator value measures. So they are defined as a set of elements, let's say, again, k is needs not to be equal to the trivial k, is a set of k elements which belong to a set, let's say, epsilon, such that sum of those ei are equal to 1, and the set epsilon of size n is defined as a set of Hermitian operations which are positive defined. This we know very well. By the way, this positivity constraint can also be formulated in the following way. For any positive law, for any state law which belongs to a set of mixed states, trace of ei law is not negative. By the way, from the mathematical point of view, this is just a relation between two counts, and here it occurs there are self-dual counts of positive operators. One is counts of positive states, another is counts of elements of pure V. It was so for the standard quantum theory. Now let us go to the extended theory, and we define now extended POVMs. And the definition is, as you see, almost the same. So now the set of, we have set of k operators ei, which belongs to a set epsilon now with x for extended, a different set, which also satisfies this relation. And now I define here as a key definition, set of extended elements of POVM, because it's also Kermitian operators. But instead of this equation, I'll take an analogous one. The trace of EI sigma is larger or equal than zero for all sigma which are visible, which belong to the set of my set of extended states I defined before. This is again an equation for definition of dual counts. So as red denotes this, here it was on purpose shown the right angle, which makes clear there are dual counts of positive operators. Qm denotes a smaller subset of the set of positive operators of size n squared. It's a smaller curve. Therefore, the dual curve, the green one, of elements of POVM is larger. Well, hey, it's easy to see that it can be larger. For instance, for n equal to, just take four operators of this form. They are diagonal, equal to 1/2, with 1 minus sign here, there, there, and there. First of all, they are not positive, of course, because there is a minus somewhere here. On the other hand, sum of those is equal to identity. However, if we restrict our attention to state sigma, which belongs to our set octahedron, so then they cannot be pure. The spectrum of sigma is majorized by vector 1/2, 1/2, 0, 0. So it's easy to see that for all such sigma, those traces are non-negative. So it means that EI belongs to our set of extended POVM. And again, from a geometrical point of view, I'm sorry, this is also a fraction, but I couldn't recognize. So now the set of extended observable is a dual set, which is larger. In this case, it's just a cube, which is dual to the octahedron. The dual polytope is obtained in this way, that for any corner of the smaller set, we get a face of the larger set. So you know that cube is dual to the octahedron. So is it somehow response to your question? So now I'm about to, to finish the first part, to define my theory. So the extended quantum theory can be defined by following assumptions. We define the set of extended states. They are just truncated set of two qubits, and it lives in the size, in the space of size r to n to power 4, which justifies the name quantum theory, whereas the standard quantum theory can be called quadratic. Now we define measurements, and we define elements of those extended POVMs, and the set is just dual to Q and not, and it's larger than standard set of POVMs. Next assumption goes scope of the system. Here we don't do anything new, we just assume we use standard tensor product structure. So if we have two subsystems, A and B, sigma, A belongs to QN, sigma B to QK, then the total system, which describes the both subsystems, belongs to QN and K. And the last assumption concerns already discrete linear dynamics, so like maps. I can call now, let's say, super maps, which map those extended states, sigma into sigma prime. And so this is my map, which is a linear map, which maps the set of QN into QN. Not completely positive, but I will assume in a similar way that it preserves the set QM. Of course, it cannot lead any admissible state outside QM. Moreover, it's, I will define it completely preserving. What means it preserves the set completely, that if you take the by supermap gamma extended, and act on sigma, which belongs to QN squared. It has to belong to QN squared. It is just a kind of generalization of the standard notion of completely possible. However, it's easy to see that those maps need not to be completely possible. They may, by usually they are, but they need not to. So maybe it's a good point to ask you, as a gate definition, are there any questions?
Can you be sure that so you had a theorem that the number of distinguishable states was guaranteed?
Yes, it is.
Can you be sure that that continues to be the case when you go to these composite systems with the distinguishable linear?
Yes, because okay, here's nothing special because I just, in such a simple way as in standard quantum mechanics, here I use the fact that the number of distinguishable states increases like a product. Here I get them n here. I'm sorry, again, it's k, so I apologize. K is my name, stands with k, but somehow I just realized that here I use k in five different meanings. So I'm sorry. So this is not the k, this k is not the form. I'm sorry. So anyway, here is n1, n2. And now the number of distinguishable states goes like product n1 times n2.
Does your assumption about the number of distinguishable states imply you have to have this?
No. Well, okay. No, just on the contrary. I would like to put this assumption free in order to have a very nice effect that my theory reduces to standard quantum theory in a special case that I will discuss right now. I would like to be sure that my theory is not worse in any sense from the standard quantum theory. So this is just, I copied somehow this assumption from the standard theory. Moreover, as you see, this is also a kind of generalization of the notion of completely positive maps. The only thing is that different codes are preserved.
Is it? And for the composite system, still backwards, the partial trace still works?
Yes. Okay, so this is just what I was about to tell you. So more formally, I can just put forward two propositions. First is that the extended theory covers entire quantum theory. And the proof is just enough to assume that all states have the product form, all Gauss operators, all elements of P of M have also product form. So basically, you have one hockey stick, but you say that, oh, perhaps there's another one, but you don't care at all because it's not correlated. And then, just like partial trace, you forget about this non-existing ghost stick. And then somehow you get back the standard quantum theory.
So, what's one I was asking? If you have a composite system, so from the last slide, AB, then you said so the states of the composite system are the product thing. But in order to meaningfully call this a product system, presumably there has to be some way of saying, well, given this composite system, what's the marginal state of A? What's the marginal state of B? And so that's still formed by the partial trace.
No, I'm sorry. There was a kind of misunderstanding. I was talking here about product state with respect to those systems.
Yeah.
The composite system has two objects, let's say, two objects and two ghosts. So I was now, talking about partial trace over two ghosts to get two objects, physical objects.
No, you want to do partial trace over one sum.
Yeah, okay. I see now. Okay.
The point is that if you have this composite system, in what sense is it actually made up of A and B? That's the real underlying question.
So I see the point. Basically, I allow, in my setup, I allow any state which belongs to Q and K to represent the composite system, and then the point is that partial trace of it with respect to k-dimensional subsystem will give me an object which belongs to this set. Otherwise, this is the key point.
Okay.
In that way. So then partial trace cannot let me out of this Q elements or entire structure.
Yes.
Thank you. Yeah. Good point.
That property is true. That property is a theorem to that effect. That if you take the partial trace, it's still.
Okay, thanks. I will think about it. Okay, I will. Good point. So I cannot now offhand give you. I will consider it again. Mm-hmm.
My second question was in your proposition 2 on the next slide, but I'll ask an extension anyway. I was wondering how you know this just isn't some version of quantum theory, but larger, with more degrees of freedom. And the answer is, according to proposition 2, it's not. But intuitively, I'm having a hard time seeing what it is that's, like, what do I expect to come out of this extended theory that's different from standard quantum? Or is that a premature question?
No, this is also a good question. And also, as you can guess, the kind of questions I will not have an immediate best answer. However, just technically, you can compare, for instance, what happens if you take a state of extended theory evolved by a supermap to say sigma prime, and perform partial trace with respect to, let's say, goes to get back the standard quantum theory, and I will call it state of prime. It's obtained by partial trace with respect to the Gauss spiral. Or you can start with the initial state, and I will call it, say, such a transition, a hyper decoherence in an analogy to decoherence. I will get my state raw, and I can now look for a kind of a projection of the supermap of the extended theory into a map of standard quantum theory. Here, I have a kind of a concrete recipe how to do it. You take a so-called Chori matrix, which fulfills necessary conditions for the extended theory, and I perform partial traits, and I get a Chori matrix for psi, which represents a map inside standard theory. And now the point is that here, those two states, just you can see by writing it out, they are not the same. So it means if you start with a state which is non-trivially correlated with this ghost, then the outcome will depend whether you allow for a full extended dynamics or first reduce to quantum dynamics and perform the reduced dynamics. This is one argument.
So,
yes?
And I expect maybe that Bell's inequalities are going to get messed up or changed or something? Or?
Well, another good question I was not thinking of. I believe, okay, of course, as you can guess, I don't know. But I would suggest there would be a kind of higher order Bell inequalities which would reduce to standard one if you perform this projection.
Yeah, but
of course I don't know. Okay,
not
yeah,
uniquely
I can be
reduced, according necessarily uniquely reduced.
Okay, so I was, right. I don't know. Okay.
So you haven't thought about that?
No, I haven't. Okay. I'm really now pleased to be here and to have a chance to talk to you because, okay, I was talking a couple of times in Poland, but nobody asked me so good questions as you do. So now we have good things to work about. Yeah. Okay, so in a sense, this is a kind of some things I really don't know. So I said I have 1 hour time, or okay. So, since now I'm a bit tired, I will have a short break for a commercial. If you are interested in Hadamard matrices, I have a chance to visit my talk at UW. This is a nice Hadamard matrix of size 6, found by Bouchard and Coara this year. By the way, I was discussing this problem also here some years ago. So now if you are interested in Hadamard matrices, there is a nice catalog of those, of all objects we know. If you happen to know more, please let us know when we can put new Hadamard matrices, which are used in quantum information and theory of quantum mechanics. But I have to say that this problem is not so closely related to the talk I'm giving right now. So this is the end of commercial. And now I will start the second part of my talk. Okay, I'm doing fine. And I'm somehow happy because 2 years ago I was, in a sense, in between two groups of foundations of quantum mechanics and quantum information theory. And now I believe my talk is also somehow in between. So what I discussed to this point was a kind of a possible construction of an extended quantum theory, which is related, I hope, to foundations of quantum mechanics, and now we can try to continue with this way of reasoning and ask what such a theory would imply for the theory of quantum information. You know that if we allow for a change from classical to quantum information processing, we gain a lot. Raymond sitting here, he leads the institute only because there is a great advantage of working with the quantum information processing with respect to classical. Therefore, he might be interested if we allow for extended theory, or if the experimental physicists will manage somehow to find those, whether people from the algorithmic point of view could have even more to do, would perhaps find a new extended algorithm. So, this is only a question. This is only a question.
We have to change the name for
it, right? Not yet. Not yet. Theoretical physicists is simple, that you write simple. We can basically assume that we can use x-rays. Let's assume we know how to use x-rays. We have a stick and somehow gold stick. We can entangle them together. What can we gain with it? Of course, as you can guess, again, my answer is I don't know if we gain much. But, okay, well, we have to be modest. We want to start with something. So I will show you that a kind of extended theory of information processing is possible, and perhaps it's not so trivial. Here I produced for you an example related to the dense coding. Let me first start with the standard and then coding to remind you how it goes. We have two sides, Alice and Bob. Here is just the demarcation line. What Alice does, we start with the initial entangled state, so Bell state for instance, and Alice would like to send two qubits, and she takes one bit, a part of this entangled pair, and she can encode two bits by applying one of four power matrices, including identity, so interrotation. Then she sends them one qubit, and Bill takes now both states and performs a joint measurement in Bell state, in Bell basis, and he gets back two bits into a set. So total, let's say, saldo is with initial entanglement and the transfer of one qubit here, from Alice to Bob, you can set two bits. So now, by analogy, I will describe a kind of a first protocol in the extended theory. Let's assume now that Bob and Alice are clever enough and they can control extended bits. And Alice would like to send now two qubits. And I guess similar. We start with initial entanglement. Now, black dots denote real states, those empty kind of ghost states, and I number them 1, 2, 3, 4. So Alice controls 1 and 3. She codes here 2 qubits. By the way, we assume that this what she has is an X bit. So in X bit, there's no place for 2 qubits, in fact. But somehow she can encode 2 qubits, then she sends her X bit, and then Bob does something. Now it will be a global operation performed on two X bits, and eventually he would like to get two qubits back. So the total equation is very similar. Here, initial entanglement plus transfer of one X bit gives us possibility to send two qubits, which is very similar to here. But this is, you see, different.
So is that, have you demonstrated that, or is this an expectation?
Here I'm proud to say, I did something. And of course, I have to mention my friend from Poland, Jarek Misztak. So this is just a demonstration for you. The scheme is exactly as I described before. Now I will just more precisely define what I'm doing. In the phase A, I prepare a special state, which is defined here. I call it raw A. Phases A. Okay, it's just a mixture, uniform mixture of four skewer states. As you see, it's 0, 0, 1, 1, 1, 1, 1, 0, 0, and 0, 0, 1, 1. And the mixture is some weights of 1, 4, and it is easy to see that this very state belongs to Q4. Yes?
Okay, so what's the breakdown there? That the first two bits within each are Alice's and the second two are Bob's?
No, Alice's are 1 and 3, and Bob's are 2 and 4.
Oh, okay, sorry, yeah.
However, Alice 1 and black are those real, which we know from physics, quantum physics, and those empty are those not known yet.
So the first two are the real and the second two are the ghosts?
Yes, exactly. This is so.
So it's real Alice, real Bob, ghost Alice, ghost Bob.
Yes. So phase A is clear. We first produce something. And we can be sure that this really belongs to the set. It's allowed set in our theory. Now, Alice wants to do something. She needs to encode to qd and space b. What she does? We describe phase b by just unitary rotation. So ub is u rho a u tangle. Well, u is ua times 1b. It means that only Alice does something. Bob does not do anything. So b stands for not doing anything by Bob. And this ua consists of two parts. It's just a unitary rotation, w1 times w2, this Alice does, where w1 is just a unitary matrix of size 2 in which you can just put a state, a pure state of one qubit you want to encode. So it's a unitary matrix which looks like this, psi 1 minus psi 1 dagger. This is just a two times two matrix. You see it is a unitary matrix, and in matrix w2 you encode second state you want to set. This is phase B, phase 2. So Alice uses this unitary operation only to encode two qubits in her part of the state.
So yes. We're assuming that these states, Alice knows the classical description of the state.
Well, she takes any unitary matrix of size 2 she wants, and each unitary matrix of this kind encodes quantum bit.
Well, okay, but if she's given, if somebody gives her two qubits embedded in x bits, then is there a way that she can transfer those into the system?
Well, what do you mean by physically giving?
He starts with a larger system that is not just the x bit that she's sharing, the entangled x bit,
uh-huh,
but two additional x bits, which are supposed to represent quantum states. All she knows about them is that they're
standard. So I see the point. So of course, I was not thinking about this. I assumed she knows the states she wants to send. Allow her to construct this unitary matrix in which those states are encoded. Or, in other words, she has some operations in which those two states sit. But, okay, I, of course, neglect here a problem of measurement, how to somehow get those information.
But you're assuming she knows how to measure an x-bit. She can tell what x-bit she's got, right?
So, but the thing is that, in that case, you can do it with an entangled pair.
I'm not sure this is exactly the same. Why? Because here, look, what is important that on her side is a special kind of subsystem in which there's no place for two qubits. Why? Because one x bit doesn't contain two qubits. So somehow, it is an analog of standard encoding because she can encode. Okay, I have not done here, but she can encode those two qubits in a part of her system. In principle, she has no chance to put two qubits, which there are no place for those.
Yeah, well, it's because there's this phenomenon known as superdense coding of quantum states, already in quantum mechanics, but there's a different concept, it's only asymptotic.
Okay, I see. Okay. And this is somehow not asymptotic, this is just that one, but okay. So now just to finish, so then in phase C, she sends her part of the system to Bob. Now, in interesting phase D, Bob has now control over entire set, so to speak, of two x bits. He can do whatever he wishes to, and he performs a global unitary operation. D stands for decoding, and it's not so simple. I mean, perhaps it's easier idea, but what we came up is such a situation that this D is product of, here's a swap, S stands for swap, which exchanges 2 and 3. It's a bit tricky. It exchanges physical state of Bob with the ghost of Alice, and it's acted with X times X, where X stands for such a operator which acts on 2 qubits. And altogether, this is a unitary operation, and we get rho D. And here is final trick. Bob performs a measurement, So in this case, measurement is just a partial trace over ancillas, partial trace over those dots, 3 and 4. He performs a partial trace over states 3 and 4, and what he gets is just a pure state where those two qubits are in 1% reactive again. So, as you see, this is a kind of analog of the standard dense coding procedure in the standard quantum mechanics, and it shows that, okay, one can try to do something non-trivial with exits.
Is this step in stage D, is that allowed by your dynamics?
Yes, yes. This is just a unitary. All unitaries are allowed. This is just a unitary dynamics. Since times go on, I think I will slowly come to conclusions, maybe not yet. I will just mention one more natural point, which may be important, maybe not. Because obviously you can say, oh, if we manage to construct quartic quantum theory, which is extension non-trivial of the standard quadratic, you could perhaps go even higher and look for higher order quantum theories, or higher order quantum information. And physically it means that we have not only one dose, like more dose. And then the k is just the first k of Lucian. The number of degrees of freedom would scale like n to the power r. R is this exponent. And if we take more ancillas, m ancillas, then r will be equal to 2 to m. And then, mathematically speaking, we just embed again block ball into higher and higher and higher dimensions. So formally, we define again the entire definition of the extended theory goes on. We only change the definition of the set of allowed states. So we define it as a subset of the, here should be n to power m. It's a larger, it's a set of m qubits, and then sigma is given by just convex hull of u. The only difference is that we have a pure state, which is now tensor to the identity of larger size, of size m to m. And now the unitary matrix, so arbitrary unitary, belongs to the space of u of size m to power n plus 1. So then, we somehow extend even more the set of allowed states. In our term, which now contains of a longer vector, there are more faces. And then we truncate our syntax of eigenvalues even more and more. Because we truncated, then the set of, this is an interesting point, set of allowed observables is larger and larger because it's a dual set. So the smaller, the more truncated is the set of states. The larger is the set of observables. And in this way, one can define an entire infinite hierarchy of embedded quantum theories. So in the case of L equal 1, we have standard linear classical theory. For L equal 2, we have the quadratics of quantum theory we know very well. For L equal 4, we have just quartic theory I tried to describe now, or you can think of any kind of octonic theories or two empty theories and so on. And in this way, we can also, in principle, think of an infinite set of embedded theories of generalized quantum magic processing. So you can generalize not only once, but several times. Well, and this is almost it. Of course, you can then ask, well, what to do? So I will try to conclude with many question marks. I'm very happy of your remarks and all comments, because the room where Mr. Lambert progressed. So I can promise I'll try to take all your comments under account. And I can conclude that by extending the set of states and operations, it's interesting that we could simultaneously increase the set of allowed states and operations, because then the states form a subset of the allowed cone of positive matrices. We could propose a generalized quantum theory. And this theory covers standard quantum theory, but it is different than if we allow for an entanglement of our physical state with the ancilla, we might possibly get different predictions for the outcome of the measurements. From the point of view of the axiomatic approach of Lucien, somehow this work, I believe, showed that really he was right, as usual, and this axiom of simplicity is necessary because only this axiom can rule out possible higher order theories and allow us to get, in fact, standard quantum theory. And then I believe there are many challenges, and well, for physics, information theory, and mathematics. So, of course, for scientific physics, okay, here is an instrument for theoretical physics. So, we should, on one hand, try to think at least whether there might be a kind of experimental scheme such that probabilities computed with respect to extended or quantum theory would differ. So, as I mentioned already several times, the key point would be to find the appropriate initial conditions for looking about goals which have to be abandoned. If they are product, somehow we not see them at all. How, on the other hand, if we don't see anything, oh, you can say like this, you can try to somehow say this theory by saying, oh, you cannot see it because the effect of hyper-decoherence, so decoherence of the physical system from the goals, occurs so fast that we cannot see it. So even if we don't see nothing, just by measuring or we could somehow try to determine the time of hyper-decoherence. In comparison to the classical theory, we can say, oh, we don't see quantum effects concerning this hockey stick because decoherence occurs so fast that we see only classical effects. So in the same way, we can say, oh, even if we haven't measured anything which is compatible with the extended theory and differs from the quantum, we can try at least to say, oh, it is so because this higher order hyper-decoherence occurs very fast. So from the experimental data, we should be positioned in principle to get an upper bound of this time of hyper-decoherence. And then, from the mathematical point of view, it's of course interesting to perhaps study properties of the set of extended states and extended elements of POVM or extended linear maps, which are not completely positive, but completely, they completely preserve the structure of allowed states. And then from the information science point of view, we know how much we gain by allowing for a quantum information processing. So in the same way, we can ask, is it useful to now try to perform tasks of information processing using the extended theory? So it would be nice to find a useful operation which is allowed in the extended theory and not admissible in quantum theory, which might be useful, anything. And then try to check whether there is a kind of power of this extended theory to design something, some algorithm which could be, from this or other point of view, better than this of standard quantum theory. And eventually, even if physically we will not observe effects confirming the extended theory, just by theoretical investigation, we can somehow see how power or advantages or possibilities offered by classical, quantum, and extended theory information processing look like. Thank you very much.
So, when you have these extended, the extra POVMs that are not allowed in this kind of the two-qubit quantum system, can you use those to do measurements on? And you have the so you have your embedded quantum system. Quantum theory within this extended theory. Can you use those extended POVMs on the embedded quantum theory to do measurements that wouldn't be allowed quantum mechanically?
Well, no, I see the point. Look, in a sense, I do like this. I perform extended POVMs on the extended system, and then I perform partial phase. And by doing this, it may happen that if you somehow start with the quantum object, extend it, perform POVMs allowed, and project back, you will get something which is not admissible standard theory. By the way, here I have to mention one of your friends, Daniel Terrano, with whom I worked on related projects 2 years ago. So then it's just the idea that correlation, here it was just with Daniel standard quantum theory, but basically the non-trivial correlations between one physical system and another, and that some operations which are allowed and partial effects may lead to non-standard effects.
So that is possible?
Yes.
Okay. So, and then moving back a step. So, if we think of of standard quantum theory as embedded in this classical yes. probability theory, like the example you gave of the block sphere mm-hmm. and the cube
yeah.
instead of being the cube yeah. of yeah. bit.
Three bits. Let's
yeah, well, that's right. Three bits forming a cube of bit. Anyway, so the...
It's a ton.
Yes.
In English.
Never mind. So the point is that now you've paired off the edges, which all, again gives you a larger set of measurements. So maybe you can think of the quantum states, the extra power of quantum theory coming not from having superpositions per se, but from having more measurements available that to allow us to distinguish probability distributions in ways that you can't do classically.
Yes, I agree with this point, it is so. Moreover, I have to be honest, then this comparison, this analogy is not complete. For instance, I'll let you mention, let me go back to this picture. Here, in transition, let's say classical Markov, by cutting out those corners, we get a continuous somehow regroup or group of operations. And here, we work in different states of eigenvalues. And each point represents an entire orbit, which we have in both theories. So here, by truncating blue corners, we get only some discrete group of symmetry changes that increases, but only we get additional discrete symmetry group and not continuous.
That suggests
it's truncated differently, basically.
Yeah, it's truncated differently. But that suggests a different extended theory, which maybe doesn't work for some other reason, is that instead of embedding an octahedron, you have an inscribed sphere.
Okay. Yeah. I see the point. Okay. So, to be quick, I don't claim this is the only possible definition, and of course there might be others. However, somehow from my perspective, it's simplest, and it has almost a physical interpretation because we just assume that there is a kind of ghost stick which stays there and nobody sees it at all. Moreover, there were some maybe experts in the theory of foundations will. Correct me, but I was thinking there was some kind of papers that you can never exclude such a possibility. There is some ancilla which exists somewhere. You cannot never determine the dimensionality of the system, which if this ancilla is uncoupled. So in a sense, it's like this.
Comment. As you know, as we discussed before, one can approach things from a history starting point instead of a sort of stage starting point. And then there's an analog of Lucian generalizations, which is sort of higher version of measure theory. And in that case, there's actually a simple experimental test for whether or not you've truly gone beyond quantum mechanics if you can handle something like diffraction. So the simplest case would be the three-slit diffraction experiments. So do you think that if you can set that up within your model, then there's a simple invariant you can compute. If it comes out non-zero, then you've gone beyond quantum mechanics.
Yeah.
There's some three-particle interference instead of only two-particle interference. So do you think there's a hope of setting since last week?
Yeah, I had this in mind, of course, as we discussed before. So perhaps there's a nice theory of three four-slits of Raphael, and we already discussed it might be. It might be nice if it is so that there's a relation between both theories, but I haven't checked yet whether it is so. Of course, it would be nice to check. Moreover, I should mention another personal thing. There is a nice paper by Matthew Liefer and Howard Baldwin about more abstract way of generalizing quantum theory using just convex set mathematical structure. And in a sense, I just had a chance to discuss this with Matt, so our this approach is somehow compatible with theirs. So there is a somehow relation to other possible approaches. I don't know how it would work.
Yeah, I'm not just asking about the relationship to the approach, but I'm saying if you can model a certain experiment in this scheme, never mind reference to any other approach, then you can see whether or not you've gone beyond quantum mechanics. You need to do a diffraction experiment like one slit open, two slits open, three slits open, all pairs of slit open, and then you superimpose the patterns alternating sides. Mm-hmm. You should get zero if you're doing quantum mechanics.
Mm-hmm.
But if you actually go into the add quantum mechanics, you should get non-zero.
Mm-hmm.
So any kind of setup that you can make, it doesn't have to be literally diffraction, but any kind of setup in which three alternatives can be made, mm-hmm. potentially to interfere, can exhibit this too.
Mm-hmm. No, sorry. see and appreciate the point, but I cannot.
Just what's going to happen with the like non-local correlation, like with the extended theory? Like, is it going to probably going to change? I mean, you're going to be able to break some like bell-like type of in a different kind of way. I mean, there are some lower bounds that we're giving for like how high can be this correlation if you don't want some like funny physical things. Well,
that's why I was asking what happens with
Bell's inequality. Yeah, so, okay, but here, I'm not sure if I don't quite know. It must be, there must be some analogs of Bell inequalities, which I presume would be more general. In the particular case, if we project back to quantum theory, they should give back quantum Bell's inequalities, but I don't know.
Even in quantum mechanics, the analog of Bell inequality is already very messy.
Yeah, I know. So, okay, so this was not the first point I was trying to discuss.
I have a question on that, related to that also. Is it easy to see because of your rules that you can't signal faster than light in this setup?
I don't know.
Meaning, is there
a
no chlorine there?
Any good question. Okay, I was thinking about it. So. But I, okay, this is only my vague, I believe in this, you know, but no, okay, I cannot think about it, but there are many things I have to think about.
So, yes. You know Rob Speckin's FOI theory?
Yes, okay.
So this seems like this has maybe some similarities, like a kind of a quantum version of that FOI theory or something. Have you thought about that at all?
Well, maybe not enough. But somehow, as I understand, this theory is somehow extension of quantum theory, so and his was a special case, in some sense.
Well, yeah, no, but the point is, yes, no, absolutely. But the point is he had, you know, like for one qubit, he had these four boxes, two of them.
Yeah.
Which somehow seems to me to bear some resemblance to what you're doing, where you have, so you have, basically saying you have four states, right, and kind of one real state and one bit state that says where you are. Bit state is then mixed. You can't narrow it down completely.
Yes.
So when you phrase it that way, it sounds a little bit like what you're doing, where you have an expert.
Okay. But still, I see that. No, there's kind of analogy, but still, this approach there are more at least of freedom and more.
Sure.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. No, absolutely. I'm not saying they're the same.
No.
I'm not saying
this
doesn't include quantum theory.
Yeah.
Here,
yeah.
Does.
Yeah.
Any further questions?
Thank you for your time. Thank you very much. Thanks for all of you.